we are digging up the underneath the existing concrete floor. There is rather large pipe that are 10 feet deep. And we're needing to make connections to those. And usually when we're trying to make connections to existing piping, and we've done it here, if it's out in the yard, we go out and dig it up in the yard, so we know, oh, the not only do the drawings say it's there, but it's right there. We dug it up. We can't do that for these pipes underneath the floor. And so the risk that the contractor, you know, starts before these trailers, starts the 5-month clock, and the first thing they do is they get rid of this stuff, and the second thing they do is cut a hole in the floor and dig down and find, if we're surprised about where that pipe is or what condition it's in or where it's at, there's only 5 months to deal with it. Now, we still have that 5-month period, and they'll have to spend some time getting these set up and operational, but there'll be that 5-month period plus an additional 5 or 6 months to do the work in here. Meanwhile, Brant fires up the plant. After the 5 months outage, we're able to deliver water using these trailers.
How many MGD are those trailers? Is that more than what you currently
need? It's more than what you need, and it also means that we can run those at a nice low flux to meet the demands. So you can produce everything you're producing today with those two trailers at an easier pace and a lower flux rate.
Are they just like semi-truck trailers enclosed or just rolling? Okay.
Yeah.
Is there any way to maybe get creative, like and buy instead of lease and then use the actual filters in the plant since they'd be bought versus leased?
Yeah, so in terms of the trailers themselves, maybe if you want to buy the trailer and use it as the trailer, and
or just the
somewhere
guts,
else.
Like the stuff inside, how similar is it up
to what's inside? And we did look at that. And matter of fact, we did a whole evaluation when we started thinking about this. And it goes back to we were thinking about replacing some of the existing membranes with these new membranes that are coming along. And it that didn't pencil out under that condition, and trying to use it here and trying to save some money by buying some of these membranes and putting them down there, it won't end up, it just won't pencil out. And we'll want to be fully having these things complete and, you know, testing them and running them through their paces while we're still using these to produce the water. So there's an overlap period that kind of challenge.
Is it pretty much the same equipment though? I mean, is it just be piping and filters, or is there anything else within the trailer?
It is certainly the exact same membrane modules that we're using, but the bits and pieces and the racks that they're attached to are.
That's
are
the filter's probably the most expensive part, or?
It all adds up, but the main purpose, or a main purpose, is to be able to keep running these plants, run those while these new plants are kind of fully installed and tested. And
well, so I'm thinking the plant's done and tested, you know, you take the filter, anything that's usable from the trailers,
yeah,
and then eventually down the road use them.
Yeah. It is the same exact membrane supplier. And so we can certainly ask those questions. Hey, we're done with these. Is there.
So instead of leasing, you'll buy them, knowing that the trailers and piping are not going to use later. But if there's other stuff that could be reused as spares, backups that eventually will be used.
Yeah, we'll look into that. We'll check that.
Thought.
We'll look into that.
It's good redundancy in the meantime, for sure.
I was just going to ask how big the water tank is.
That's the existing tank?
The existing tank, 850.
Okay.
Yeah.
It looks big on the picture.
It is big.
I think so.
And that existing tank is just fine. I think the next slide is just kind of highlights what those added
items are. Maybe we want to. I can tee that up, or do you want to provide some background before me?
Okay, so unfortunately, the costs are big. Costs are $50 million. If they come in there, as I understand it, that may kill the project. That is an unaffordable, potentially an unaffordable project and a big deal. So we're pretty fortunate to have this concept available to us. If there were in many other circumstances, we wouldn't have the ability to find a bid alternate or to find one that was big enough that could really check the box. But what we're looking at here, so this is the main plant. Right, there's the existing plant, those are the new sludge tanks that we're adding. This is the existing GAC building. That's the new GAC building highlighted in yellow. And so what we are proposing, and I think looking for just a confirmation of as we move forward. Again, we won't really know what the costs are. We know what Perillo's estimate is. We won't know until bid day what the real cost is. But what we can do is create a bid alternate, and the bid alternate includes two big items. One is the whole GAC building and the two GAC contactors and the backwash pump. And this is some associated piping in the existing building basically to make that happen. That's a chunk that we can cleanly carve out of the project. We're not going to carve it out of the project, but we can cleanly define it as, hey, Mr. Contractor, when you cost this out, give us this cost separately. And it's the whole building. It's the GAC. It's a standalone building, so it's very cleanly defined. When we ask stuff like this to the contractor, when it gets hard is contractor can't tell what's in and what's out. What is the bid item? What's not the bid item? What's in the base bid and what's in the additive? In this case, it's pretty clean. It's pretty clean for us to define on our drawings what's the alternative, and pretty clean for the contractor to know, oh, this is part of the added bid item. So the GAC, that's a big chunk of work. And then still a significant but a smaller chunk of work is what's highlighted in blue here. This is the belt filter press. What we're seeing is the new belt filter press. The project, as it's defined now, the full project, the $50+ million project, it does include the yellow, and it does include this blue, which is replacing the belt filter press, replacing the polymer blending unit, a chemical feed unit that makes that work, and the cake conveyance. This basically squeezes all the water out of the solids that we pull out of the water, and then we convey it into a truck or into a dump truck. So right now, those are at the end of their useful life. They're not completely done. They work fine. They're working right now. But they're tired. They're at the end of their useful life. And they're also in the way. It doesn't look like they're in the way because with this GAC building, there's a new doorway we're cutting in here. So these two kind of work together. This is not in the way of that doorway. But where the existing one is, it is in the way. But if we wanted to, or we can postpone the GAC building, and we can postpone replacing the existing dewatering equipment as a cost-saving measure. It's not really saving costs. All this stuff you have to do. We looked in to say, ooh, do we really need to do this? The answer is yes, we really do need to do this. It's not like this is fluff. But it could be done later, not a whole lot later, and we'll see that in a minute, but it could be done later. And similar to what I said about the yellow, we can cleanly define this. We can point to the belt filter press and say, the base bid, you're just leaving all this stuff the way it is. In the additive bid item, you're building the GAC contactor and this associated piping, and you're replacing the belt filter press, the polymer blending unit, and the conveyance. Those two add up to, and I'm not looking at numbers, they add up to like $7-8 million. So on bid day, instead of just asking the contractor to say, give me one lump sum bid for the whole thing, we're going to say, contractor, give me a lump sum bid. Give me a bid for the base bid that includes the entire project except for what's in yellow and blue. And then give me a cost for the additive bid item that includes both of these things. We're going to keep them simple for the contractor so it's easy on bid day for them. We're going to lump these two together. And then when we get the bids, what we'll get from the contractors, and so hopefully we have four contractors. We have four contractors that give us, here's what I'm going to do. Each one says, here's what I'm going to do for the base bid, and here's what it is to add. We'll define for the contractor. We're going to define the low bid is whoever's low on the base bid. And that makes it clear for them. The base bid is defining who gets the award. And then we can look and see, can we, the collective we, can Mountain Regional afford that? Well, first of all, can you afford the base bid? It's question number one. And two is, can we afford that additive bid item? And so you'll have the ability, armed with the real costs, you'll have the ability to say, oh, here's what the base bid is going to cost. And, oh, yep, we can afford that. And, oh, look, that base bidder is going to charge us this much to do the added bid item. And all of that is well below Corolla's estimate. I don't know where they were, but we can afford the whole project. So you can award the base bid plus the added bid item. You can award just the base bid, or in the worst case condition, it's like you can cancel the bids and have to figure out what to do because even the base bid costs were too high.
So Alan, talk about currently we're at 2.6 MGD. If we don't do these two additional GAC, what will we be able to produce?
So from a just a hydraulic point of view and the main part of the treatment point of view, if we did just the base bid, the plant can make 5.4 MGD. The problem is we can't meet disinfection byproducts. There's too much TOC in the water. So we can't get to that 5.4, that reliable capacity. But without the GAC, it's basically 3.6 MGD, right? Without the GAC, you can reliably treat with TOC removal 3.6 MGD. And then when you need to get to the 5.4 MGD, you'd have to build what we postponed. And there's costs associated with that. But it can be, and we've looked at this a lot again, what makes this possible is it's easy to describe for the bidders. It's a chunk of work that can be taken out and you still have an improved project. And it's also a chunk of work that can be done in the future. It isn't any harder, depending on how you structure it, it isn't any harder to build this as a separate project in the future than now.
And the other added expense would be we would be changing out our carbon more frequently on the existing vessels, and we're spending
$115, $120 every to replace two. And there's four of them, so we do it two every year.
Yeah. So we've probably doubled that cost.
And I think you put these numbers together.
Because we have to change it out more frequently, so we're only doing two. So if we have to do four vessels a year instead of just the two, adding the two is twice as much as the.
Yes.
To get us to the 3.6.
Well, the 3.6, 3.6 is basically keeping the GAC replacement frequency where it's at. That, okay. And I think the answer is that you can go 3 to 4 years at the 3.6 MGD. Now we're getting into the stuff you put together. So I don't know.
On the projection.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can switch to that.
Really quick, these two, the GAC and the solids, they could be seen as separate add-ons. They're not exclusive. Like, you do them both or you do neither.
The cleanest way to do it, and my recommendation, is to let's do them both or neither. And out of that $7 million, like, The belt press is 1.4 meters.
Okay. It seems like that'd be the harder one to kick down the road versus adding on. It seems to just, maybe I'm wrong, but the GAC adding on would be easier later than it would be the guts of the plant.
What's going on in there is, it's pretty straightforward. That part of the plant is pretty open. It would be, it's pretty straightforward to replace the blue in the future. What you can't do, you physically can't do, is you can't do the yellow without the blue. Because if you just try to do the yellow, the existing equipment that the blue is replacing is in the way. Okay.
Gotcha. So they do, they kind of have to be together.
Yeah.
Okay.
You could just add in the blue and just do that. But it's just cleaner. It's cleaner to just keep it simple for the bidder. Bid day is nuts for contractors. Sure. And if there's the more alternatives there are, the more complicated it is. But I'll try to. So if you postponed the yellow and the blue, and you had a reliable 3.6 MGD, that buys you a couple of years without going nuts and replacing the GAC. It might buy you more years if you did some creative stuff, and that creative stuff could include replacing the GAC more. It could include some changes in the distribution system. Those stuff, if you can do stuff like that, and replacing the GAC is expensive. That's what you're talking about. The GAC is really expensive to replace. And so one strategy to prolong how far you can go without those two new contactors, one strategy is to go beyond that 4 to 6 years. One strategy is replacing that more frequently. But that's really operating. That's dollars. But you can get a couple of years with that kind of thing.
Seems like it's just throughput.
It's throughput, but it's also that GAC has got absorption sites. It's sort of once it gets spent, then it's done. If we're running more, if we don't have those two, then we might be running more water through the other ones, or we might be running less water through the other ones. But the way those GAC, they sort of get those sites, the adsorption, the capability is what they can remove slows down the time. And if we can run them longer, even though they're not doing everything they did when we first put them in, if we can run them longer, if they can give us just a little bit, then we can avoid replacing them. You'd have to start replacing them earlier in that. Once they kind of started breaking through, you'd have to replace them to get more.
Yeah, it's also challenging for us now to replace gap media during our production season when we're at our near max plant capacity.
Yeah,
so that's one of the
problems. We're down in the details now, but we're not just adding 50% more GAC contactors. We're not just adding two more GAC contactors. We're also adding this backwash pump, which is pretty significant, because right now, if you have to backwash a GAC contactor the way it's currently configured, you have to take both of the contactors out of service, because there's only one pump supplying it. And until we do the yellow, that still is the case. So it limits the flexibility. It limits the ability to backwash or replace media of one of these. In part of the yellow, part of this backwash pump provides some flexibility that, oh, I can backwash any one of these vessels and only have to take that one out. I don't have to take its twin out. So without that flexibility, that further provides some kind of hand. That further drives the need for building it. So
there will be six pumps.
Today there is one pump that supplies both of these, and it serves as a backwash pump. And that's why you can only, if you're going to backwash this guy, that guy can't operate. And so there's one pump that supplies these two, one pump that supplies those two. We are only putting one pump in that supplies those two, but we're putting a pump that can backwash any one of those. So when I want to backwash this guy, I can use this pump to backwash that guy, and I can use its pump to just supply that.
Trying to weasel too much.
Yeah.
Okay, I just have one other question on the 3.6 MGD capacity without the GAC. How does that align with the adjusted operational source?
Yeah, maybe we could
just step
through this. So I'm
curious. That's a good question. And that's.
So I'm touching all the 90% review. Thank you very much. And this is just kind of showing where we're at cost estimates. There's another thing to look at this. Yeah, Alan's point, I'll just add, we fundamentally didn't change the scope of the project. And I feel like whenever there was a opportunity to manage costs by managing scope, like going to direct filtration, we chose the cost effective route. So these increases are significant. I think it's really challenging, but I don't think they reflect changes in project objectives. It's frustrating. So you keep going.
So just kind of going back to the numbers.
Sure.
So the 30% electrical that like is the 4.3 mean it went 30% over, or is it just there was more more scope or?
Yeah, sorry. I just tried to pick out a handful of things that stood out to me that drove these costs over time. And again, just highlighting the blue bar at 30%, that's the info we used to close the review. So these additional increases are coming after that. But electrical evaluation at 30%, electrical costs were just a lump sum percentage based on total construction cost, which at 30%, I guess that's a class 4 estimate, probably something like that. It's a fairly typical thing to do. But that percentage didn't capture the electrical cost. An itemized takeoff is done by the crew team's cost estimators. And that was a $4.3 million looking at 3 notes swing in cost from 30 and 60. So that's kind of shorthand there, but that's kind of confusing how.
And that doesn't really reflect, oh, we added a bunch of electrical stuff. It just means at the level of detail that our estimators had at the 30%, electrical is kind of the last thing that gets detailed because we have to figure out everything that we're doing first. And so they threw a conservative allowance at it, thinking that was enough. When we got down to having more detail, it proved that 30%.
Yeah, and we just go through all of these. This is my take on it. RockX was another jump at 60%. Yeah, just dove more into the geotechnical work that was done. I think there was more rock excavation that was originally put in the 30% estimate. Mechanical piping, Alan can kind of speak to this, but it almost seems like that was maybe more than initially in 69.
Yeah, we feel bad in the position. This project is in relative least cost, so I apologize for that. But in the rock excavation is one that, there wasn't very good geotechnical information available by the time we got the geotechnical information down. So that really is a kind of a, we didn't add scope, but we kind of did because it was new information, right? The mechanical piping, it was an error and an omission. It was our 60% estimators. When you talk to them, they thought they had captured all the mechanical piping, but as we went back and looked at it, they just left off. The 60% erroneously did not reflect some piping that we knew about and was in the drawings, but our estimators missed. And that's a mistake.
Any ballpark what chunk extra that was? Dollars to that?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I'd have to go back and consider.
No worries.
And then I think this is the biggest one. Again, this is my take. Is I just feel like as we've gotten further and further in the project, like this temporary trailer design is it's just project sites. We're an outlier for sure in how constrained and small our sites. Completely unusual, I think. So like over time, more and more you look at the project, I think you have to price that complexity. And I think that's a big part of what's driven the cost estimate increases over time, even though we're not changing again any big picture of the project scope or objectives. That's my opinion.
And I'll say from our perspective, it's not like the site has gotten smaller since we've been here. We've known all along the site is small. So that side of it isn't new, but as you get more and more in the details, that it's not just a small site, it also is just how much is packed into the building, how much is going on. And just as we're peeling back the layers, there's...
Then this section is a little out of order, but this is the existing project schedule. Christine just got a screenshot. So our schedule essentially was working back to try and abort the project in November. That was the goal. And if we choose or not able to do that for whatever reason, there's going to be significant delays. I think realistically, just be transparent, to me it felt like looking at the construction schedule, we probably had still meet our goals of being online in 2029. We had probably 3 months of flip in the schedule. We wanted in our back pocket. But I think we that goes away. Regroup, take a different direction. Not that that's the wrong decision, but schedule would push significantly. That's where we're currently shooting for. The big milestone in here that we're working back on. So, Alan and his team immediately started looking at the cost estimate after 90% and did come up with some good value engineering items, and we're immediately incorporating those in any sort of nice thing. Even things that would be beneficial for operation that we can live without, they're coming on the project. And that's reflected in the cost of this memo and the projections that this section just touches on.
And I'll say those, again, they're not sacrificing the project, they're meeting the objectives. It wasn't a whole ton.
Yeah.
We feel good about it, but it's a 600,000 out of that estimate. Take whatever.
That was a breaker.
That was a breaker.
I guess Walmart is going to.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That same breaker just went because it's the lights.
And we, Alan, did an excellent job defining this bid alternate strategy. So, given we're getting this big of a cost increase this late into the project, I really like this bid alternate. That's what we're presenting. I think it's the only way we can move forward and still bid the project and get the price certainty we're looking for with the current financial realities. And then this just outlines, you know, in writing, I think it's pretty better. Applying this, the 90% cost estimate to the alternate strategy, that's a lot of numbers. 42.9 for base, 7.3.
What about price certainty? 50 million, does it have a contingency in there?
And the 90% is?
So our, depending on what you're getting after, I'll say it. Our estimate, our 90% estimate, we do have a contingency. And when we do these estimates, we start, like at the 30%, we have a pretty big estimate. You know, we do the best we can, and then we throw 30-40% at it to cover. We don't have all the information. And as our project gets defined and our cost estimates go from the 30 to the 60 to the 90, we reduce that contingency. But we also are replacing that what that money represented with specific line items. So we still
are carrying a 10% contingency in our 90% estimate. And that's a contingency that like the bidders won't carry. But I don't like to give up on that. Yeah. I'm not giving that 10% away because there still is stuff that we kind of might be missing and some additional details that might come up. So there is still a 10% contingency in our estimate, but again, not something I'd want to give away. And what is the other thing that's like? Oh, so, and in terms of cost certainty, once bid day comes, we have the low bid, we have what the selected bidder is saying, this is it, this is the cost. And there's some cost certainty there, but yeah. Every single project has a change order. There'll be change orders, and we should anticipate change orders. So you don't really have the full cost certainty until you're done with the project, but you've got some pretty good cost certainty.
Well, you said dig up the floor and see the pipes.
Yeah.
And it needs
that. And
I guess why?
Yeah.
Start. Options
and that's
pretty interesting.
Yeah, so that's where one could say that's where kind of our contingency covers. But really, if it's a changed condition, and we try to minimize changed conditions, that's why we do geotech report. That's why we pothole and find pipes that are in the ground that we can find to eliminate the contractor coming back in and saying, hey, you said it was here, and it's really there. Because it's there, it's going to cost me more money to fix it. You bring up a really good example. Let's say the bids come in at $45 million for the whole project, and you decide you can afford that $45 million. It's less than the $50 million, and we afford the project. If they do dig up the floor and there's something they find that is completely different that creates a change condition that we have to figure out how to address, and it costs money to address it, that would be the basis of a change order, and the change order is going to add to the total cost.
Yeah. I didn't do enough though that shouldn't, that is that a realistic threat? Or I mean, there's always a chance.
Any retrofit is, we just aren't working with perfect information, and neither are the contractors. Sure. So they're
compared to like a 100-year-old building or something.
Yeah. Well, the first of all, the record drawings aren't great. There's some uncertainty associated with the record drawings.
Yes.
Anything under the floor, we haven't been able to verify. So, but like rules of, if we want to talk about change orders just to address this, and this is generic, not specific to this project, but industry standard is 10% on a change order on a greenfield site. And at Corolla, we like to be under usually half of that. Our goal is half of that. And you can double that for complicated retrofits. And so even doubling that would be, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a change orders north of 5% on this, just because you don't know until you get there. We've done what we could do to minimize that.
And there is a contingency at 10%, assuming 5% change orders.
Well, no, that our estimate doesn't reflect change orders. Our 10% isn't baking in potential change orders. It's just
other contingencies.
So any kind of change orders are sort of on top of that. But any number of things can creep up that you just don't know till you get there. We've potholed a big Utah Valley project. We potholed a big bank here, and we potholed it 200 feet away there, and we found it, and the drawings showed it being a straight line, and when the contractor put it in, they put it in with a big wow. And that part of the wow was in our way. We had to redesign the vault because of it. So stuff. But
that's good. Thanks for. Yeah, so Farmer's objection. Okay, so we've looked at this chart a lot, just about this chart. I really like it. It shows these, I guess, ideas of total reliable source and operational source. Just made those terms up. But I think they're helpful for us for planning. So, long-term planning, basically, we want to stay in the green. And we want to stay out of the yellow. And the intent of the red, the total reliable source. Trying to find or predict like what the limit of the system is under ideal conditions. So we exceeded that last year, which is a good thing, I guess. So in these projections moving forward, I've adjusted our total source capacity up to reflect how the system performed this past year. But again, it shows, you know, we were up against the limits of the system. Again, last year was an exceptionally heavy usage year. If you look at the last 5 years of the district, on par with 2020, really, really close to 2020. That's, again, looking at last year. So this is just kind of the basis, or this concept is used for the projection.
What's 2026 looking like so far?
Oh, we could look at it. I can pull it up that.
Yeah, I'm just curious if we're, I'm assuming we're already in the yellow, if we hit the red yet. I mean, we're July 26th.
Still in the green, so just put the check together for the board meeting that didn't happen. So I can pull those things. Yeah. So keep going, Chris, if you don't mind.
Where you want me to go?
Just go to the table. So I initially put this projection together. I got with Lisa. She recommended using a 2% growth rate, which is what Steve uses for impact fees.
Yeah, we average 2-3%.
So maybe 2 is on the low side.
Potentially.
Jess gave me a good review, and I tuned this up, actually. My first iteration of this didn't have our SIL figures in it, and the projection flipped a lot. But when we see a deficit on the second and last column, PK surplus column, if you look at last year, the difference between top of the red line and the yellow line, that's basically what we're talking about. But that's the fucking point. Using a good responsible planning number with redundancy baked into it meets the goals of the master plan. We were in a deficit, essentially, even though we were able to meet our level of service and meet those demands from a planning perspective. It'd be nice to have more source production to be more comfortable as well. So that's kind of that negative 800. And then you can see we immediately get some help by dropping some of the water's delivery, bouncing back to that like negative 400 range. And then in 2029, I applied that 3.6 MGD. So we get about an extra 9 gallons of water. And that's that second key line. So you can see if we phase the project.
With that base fit, base one, just the base fit.
Thank you. We do just the base fit of the project. That's what this projection is. You can see we were back in the yellow, basically, in a more comfortable spot than we've been in. But it doesn't long term really solve the district's needs or source capacity issue. So what can we do about that? Does it get us in a warm, fuzzy place? Probably not. It gets in a much better place. But there's other ways to come at the problem, like kind of details and ideas. And I didn't know about that. That's basically is a very simple projection, obviously. That would be the consequences. Electing just to be based with different health pricing.
So the wholesale delivery, is that how much we're committed to, like, that Schedule D?
Exactly, yeah. So I'm just in anticipation of completing this project. We committed to providing wholesale water, selling water through the regionalization agreement. The Exhibit D is that one page chart that lines out how that works, which, you know, is a positive thing for us. Obviously, it's an extremely expensive project in terms of the district's annual revenue. And, you know, that's real revenue that comes back to the district. So, yeah, we put that on the table in a way we thought was conservative. But this approach, you know, I don't use the conservative anymore. And, you know, if things got to the point where we can't even build the base bit of the project, I think we'd have to go back to the regionalization group.
We only stay 5 years ahead of that, right? So we're probably only on that.
Well, they committed right now for 2 years, correct? And they're the numbers drop from 29 to 30.
Yeah.
Because we project our growth will go up and our what we are offering wholesale will go down.
What are the legal consequences if we don't deliver that?
That's a good question. I mean, contractually, we're obligated.
Was that? Yeah.
Counselor?
the lawyer would weigh in.
And we're not selling that water, that's just delivery.
No, we are selling that water.
We're selling that water through Weaver Basin. I guess it depends upon who decides to buy the water.
So right now it would be committed to some, so it would be going to some of
them. Yeah.
I mean, it goes to Weaver Basin, then they deliver it. And the only people requesting water right now is some of them.
Question would be legal consequences aside, New York City would love to send
it. So, Summit Water doesn't want to buy it.
So that's why we have both parties have water on the Exhibit D and water taken on the regional service.
Because it's less expensive, a lot less expensive. If we pull back now, and we've got 2 years committed already.
We could take the other water off the table. We would just have to figure out for 2 years.
But can we take those 2 years off?
I don't think we can take the 2 years off, but we can take out the other three.
What if we couldn't deliver it?
It's a good question. I mean, we'd have to. It's a really good question. And I don't know. I mean, like Sam said, Park City would love to fill that need, but.
Yes, my question is basically, we didn't even do phase one. We didn't do any of it. What happens? What legal position are we put in if we cannot deliver that one?
The worst case scenario is you would have to pay the difference between what you would have charged Summit Water and what Park City charges Summit Water.
So not only do we not get the revenue, we have to pay the
penalty. Right.
If I understand how the Schedule D works, though, we put water on the table, but we haven't committed to a price.
We have committed a price for 2029.
How far out did the 2 years go? We have to commit a price to.
I thought
the price was lacking more.
We committed to it, and that's when Clint said, you guys are undercutting us. But I don't think we've committed it for 30.
We committed.
This is Lisa.
Oh, hi, Lisa.
Oh, hi, everyone. Sorry, I just want to jump in quick. Have we committed to the time that we deliver that water?
Time of year?
Time of year.
No.
Okay,
so that could be, we could do it in the winter.
This is just a peak day problem, right?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but I think the only limiting factor in taking water through the regionalization agreement is the peaking factor. So I think we're required to deliver the wholesale water any time of year up to the rate at which we can deliver it. So you put on the Exhibit D annual volume and cost associated with the annual volume, and it's take or pay. And then with any water contract, there's an annual volume, and then you have to dictate how quickly you can do it. So we can get 1,000 acres tonight. So in the regionalization agreement, there's a peaking factor too. So I think that's the only constraints in which the buyer can take the water. So if they want a winter at that maximum flow rate, these acre feet figures are peaking too. If they want it summer, of course they want it summer. Street. I've never agreed in that capacity, but it wouldn't be functional if you can't take
the water. So the 372 GPM is basically the peaking of 500 acre feet or 300 acre feet over a year?
I forget the acre foot number, but yeah. Essentially, you take 300 acre feet, you turn that into a flow rate if you took it 24/7 over a calendar year.
And then you peak it to.
Multiply that by two. That's the most any one time you can ask for to receive. So it's a compromise. A seller, of course, would always want to just have the same amount 365 days a year or something.
Yeah.
That's, you know,
easy.
That's the best revenue model. That's the best valuation. You're a seller, of course, you only want the water 2 months out of the year. You'd be in an amazing position. Like, so it's a compromise.
Yeah, 28.79 an acre foot in 2029 and 30.25
in 2030. In the past, Summit's been flexible, like with how they took it. Like,
I feel like we've asked them to be flexible.
Yeah, and it worked with them because they needed it for snowmaking, for Bear Hollow, for the sports park, right? So they needed. More during a particular period, so it was easy for us to deliver to them then, and they would trim their fall and they would trim their spring so that their two peaks were offset.
And right now we're committed to 300 acre feet in 2029 and 260 in 2030.
Yeah, let's review that pricing because I think there's some flexibility in that. Within the 5 years. I think once the water's on the table, you have to do it.
300
price can change. Because the last time when we did the whole rate study to put water on the, for Summit Water going forward,
yeah,
we came up with the prices for like the next year, that the year before. Yeah. So I think there is some flexibility in the pricing still. Where we could move it up closer to match Park City if we wanted. And then we wouldn't have, quote unquote, a penalty because they'd be the same cost. So we'll do some reading on that too, for sure.
So that's how the projection is up. Are there other ways to attack our TOC and resulting disinfection byproduct issue in the distribution system? I think there are.
Yeah, what is the disinfected byproduct?
Yeah.
Issue.
So, disinfectant byproducts happen as a result of disinfection chemical, potable oxygen, we use chlorine, reacting with organics in the water that aren't removed during the treatment process. And then those two factors, the quantity of organics, quantity of oxygen, temperature and time all go together to create byproducts, and would imply that we're not really intending for them. And they're carcinogens, and they're regulated with a health-based standard through our regulators. And it's our most difficult treatment concern, I guess, for water, especially. For us, it seems to be things come to a head when our source water gets warm. So September, during the days of advertising, and actually be able to do the piece. And it's generally only our surface water source, so water that's coming out of the treatment plant, as water leaves promontory and kind of migrates to the west, it gets blended with groundwater sources, and we just see less and less DBP issues. So in reality, it's kind of a localized procedure. It's a surface water driven issue.
That's what they're just kind of.
So is it the water coming up from Rockport, or is it a problem as it?
All those four things combined with the source water in Rockport.
Yeah.
Has a significant, I think, nationwide, I don't know, it's not a tremendous amount, but a significant amount of organics. Our process is limited in how much of those we can use. And the main driver that we use in that process is our GAC. They're really effective.
And just one thing to add, that, I mean, that's well described. The thing that's different about these disinfection byproducts is they're regulated out in the distribution system.
Yeah.
So it's not like what we produce coming out of the plant. Most everything is regulated based on what you produce coming out of the plant. So you take a sample of the final effluent and you check it for stuff, and it passes or it doesn't pass. It always passes. These disinfection byproducts, because time is part of the formula, you look at out in the distribution system, kind of the worst places in the distribution system, we're going to check disinfection byproducts there. And so that creates another complication in the enforcement and the control.
Do you capture them? Do you have to use another chemical process to get rid of them?
Yeah, so from a treatment perspective.
I feel like I'm asking about it.
These are great questions. Yeah.
The ideal way I would prefer to remove them during the treatment process. Easiest, and we have an internal water quality goal we put a ton of effort into. We think it's 2 parts per million. We think organics leaving the plant, we can control 2 parts per million or less. We're going to avoid issues in the distribution system. So that's option one. And the whole plant project, we can do that. That was one of the main driving poles. There are other levers to pull in decreasing quality, I would say. Like, we could try and have a more aggressive flushing program in areas of known water age through promontory. Again, but those are our hottest, highest demand months, putting a ton of water just on the ground. It's expensive. We might be able to remove some of the more volatile forms of the regulated contaminants in storage tanks. I've seen that happen in some places. Significant DBP issues. And then if we do the base bid, we'll have membranes will be more robust. We could try and do some other things within the treatment plant. Try and move more coagulant. We'll have an acid feed system. We've never been able to make our pre-treatment work. So there's other ways we could come at it. And if we did elect, once we get bitten, if we choose to get bitten, we would pursue all those aggressively, obviously, starting next year. And try to understand all of them better.
Yeah.
And what causes the issue is this TOC, is total organic carbon.
Yeah.
And those TOC tends to be in surface waters and not in groundwater. And that's why it makes sense that where you, the parts of the system that are fed by groundwater, there's just no TOC in the water. It's just not in groundwater. It tends to be in surface water. So that's why it's in the signal source and in the areas fed by the signal source. And in life, our TOC is really pretty reasonable and low. We're spoiled with pretty good water relative to the rest of the country. There are parts of the country that they couldn't even just use. It's nice to be able to just use chlorine as a disinfectant. It's good. There's parts of the country that they can't even do that because there's so much TOC in water, even after treatment,
that they have to use an alternative kind of disinfectant, which creates a whole other set of issues. Nowhere in the Utah do we have to deal with that. So, I mean, this is, we have high quality water, but this is the regulatory director.
And then just last thing to touch on, so I think that's all the treatment aspects and direction. You know, depending how bids come out, and another lever we can pull at all. Things we talked about before, rates, of course, more punitive rates to try and control water demands, be more aggressive with our existing rules and regulations. Kind of talk about some things that Anna and her team already started doing this year. You know, the every other day irrigation schedule, warnings, violations, and fines, which this is the first week I've ever done that. And then I think Tina's point, like, we're not able to deliver water. What's that look like? Maybe some sort of emergency, like actual water restriction. Into that, like, essentially not meeting our levels of service. This will all be a contingency.
Seems surprising to anyone.
Well, I was really concerned because if you look in, you know, in our June meeting, it looked like May was significantly above last year. And I was like, oh, gee.
Which lines were
Which May was.
Yeah.
And then the June meeting we didn't have, this year we were actually down about 13% compared to last year.
So there it is
from the last 3,800, that's a number you kind of set.
So,
$3,800, you set that in term.
Yeah.
You kind of. And then what's the one that's, is there something that's required by the state?
Oh,
yeah, that's honestly, this is better, and this has very little to do with the state's source capacity compliance. This is like our internal.
That's the May bump.
It's like we had a tipping point toward the end of, I don't know if that's the middle.
Yeah, but June, that was one of the reasons we almost, I shouldn't say thought we could, because we actually had seen conservation.
Yeah.
The goal of 20%, we hadn't reached that, but we've reached about 13% drop in June culinary water. So there's your May, why we were higher in May this year than last year, or why we saw the bump. And then in June, you kind of see we've kind of just lagged a little bit behind.
Yeah.
This is kind of end of June, right? That's not July yet.
No, July yet.
So we don't know July. We'll know July here pretty quick. Beginning of next week, we'll do the billing and be able to pull all that information. But yeah, so it actually ties to what I've seen financially in build usage too.
But yeah, I think super helpful.
Yeah, that was super helpful.
What does it mean, though? What's the takeaway?
Well, the dotted line shows where it was last year, and I just knew our May numbers came in higher than last year, and last year we got into the red, so the fact that we're not even in the yellow yet this year is
the gap is direct reduction in source production. I mean, this is the difference between last year and this year.
Production or usage?
Well, usage. This is production.
This is production.
Yeah. Can you draw a line to demand, or is it? Can you translate this to the same as demand?
Yeah.
Like you produce it, use it.
You're producing it because it's demand.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a slight lag because of tank volumes and things like that.
Yeah.
But the demand is basically this. Because we're getting to that point. The water is being consumed, so wells are turning on.
Makes sense.
Plus loss.
Yeah. So if you looked at billing, it would be all of this, but be 10 to 15% less because of loss.
Yeah, system loss.
System loss.
Gotcha.
Hopefully anything compared to last year.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I think
we can reliably predict.
And it is, I think, kind of flawed. It's hard to just compare year to year. If there's one thing that's going to happen, there'll be variance. A lot of it. Bring your years. So we would hope last year would be more of a heavier use per connection or year, so you're up to maybe this year we're getting a rebound. Seeing more efficient use or less use. See, it makes sense. It's turning out. It will walk 2 minutes for it. So, again, going back to that projection, it is based off last year. So, in that sense, hopefully there's some conservatives baked in. Just that cherry picking at
the year. When I do the financial models, we use the last 3 years average.
Yeah.
And so for 26, we had a hot, we had 25 and 24 that were high, but 23 was really low. You know, so kind of, so I try to smooth the variance with that a little bit of like, at least versus, looking at 3 years. Now, 24 we thought was really high. 25 was higher. Now 26 is coming back down. So when I average, so during the year, I'll model based on the most recent 36 months, let's say. So I keep moving that at the end of every month of what I think usage is going to be next year. So.
Yeah, I mean, last year there was no drought level given. There was no messaging, right? Everybody was sick of hearing about droughts.
Yeah.
So this year, everybody's come back out and said, oh, hey.
Maybe that's the thing.
Yeah, we're back into the drought system, even though we don't have punitive rates. We're not in the higher levels yet, but the messaging has been out there. So.
Just sent you an email, Chris.
And it snowed one day during June driving up here. So that helped too. But
so my water, that sunsetted this year.
Yeah.
So that's a huge reduction.
Like, yeah. And that's where we thought we had these couple of years where we could make it work until the treatment plant was back online because somewhat water came off.
But I think a lot of that gap is not just
it might be somewhat water too.
Conservation of water. It could be the fact that we are not getting that water system.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not just that everyone's doing a great job.
Did you say, so that blue, part of the reason that blue is low is because some of water's not there?
Yeah.
That's my guess. It's not going to be all of it. I'm sure there are people who are like listening to the messaging and understanding the conditions, but I think that's not explaining that drastic of a reduction.
I don't see any neighbors in my neighborhood listening to that.
And that's to
Bill's point, that's massively surprising to me because I see people watering more.
Right, that's what I was.
I would totally buy that logic than anything else that was just said.
Yeah,
I think that makes sense. Like, you'd be a little bit lower, the 10-15%, but not the other portion.
It's almost fiber belt.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is like a good visualization. I've shared this before. These dots, the dots just represent usage, and it's it's normalized, not in the mathematics, it's normalized for equivalent residential connection, or you can just think of it for the connection. And then the blue and orange lines are trend lines. Simple exponential trend lines. So if you think of the trend line as like a running average, we're seeing a more efficient system for a whole number of reasons over time. So you move left to right in the chart, which is great. But you just see, especially the last 5 years, you see how much variance with that back and forth trend line. And then the last year, of course, way above the line, indicating a lot more usage per connection. I guess that's what when I think about variance over here in the trend line, this is what I usually think about. So we pick that high orange dot that represents peak day. We use that in projection. What are we going to see in the future? I can't tell you exactly. It'll continue to follow this trend line. Whether it's above and below, it'll just depend on a number of factors. All right, so that wraps up kind of everything.
Okay. So assuming that we have to figure out what we're going to do going forward.
So I have a question. Can we go back to that chart? Water demand and deficit. So this shows phase one. This project completed. The full project, or it's just...
No, sorry.
That's the basement.
This is single projection, only scenario that's just in the basement. Check the gap expansion.
And the solid
3.6.
Okay. And your value add things. There were 600,000. Okay, so it's all...
And even, so even if we do that, we're still shy in 29, and there's maybe some things we can do with the surplus water.
Yeah, I think we have to make it.
So the negative, Sam, correct me, but so at what point did the negative value in the deficit go into the red versus the yellow?
Like at the end of this table, essentially, like 2037.
Yeah, so these negative 300s and 400s and 500s are only in the yellow, right? They're not taking us into the red.
Where's the yellow start? What number?
Zero.
So anything negative is yellow. And then over 800 is red.
Basically, yeah. I'm sorry, this is my best word.
No, I think this really tells the story, actually.
If
the number just happened to be zero, for example, right at the peak of our ground cost operational source capacity, the loop is zero. Now that we're going into the yellow, I'm saying that's negative. I'm saying we're source deficient. And we'll climb and add about 800-ish, negative 800-ish deep, and then we're reaching maybe the true limits of what the system can put up. And you asked, like, earlier, I didn't answer, like, where that number is developed. That number is the rated capacity of the treatment plant. So we're saying we'll push the rated capacity of the treatment plant, and we can get it anywhere in the system we want, plus flat-out capacity at every groundwater system, every groundwater source in the system, multiplied by 0.85, which isn't a safety factor. It's more like a duty factor. It's not every well is in the where the demands are in the system, and it's just not physically possible around about 24/7. Tanks fill up, push pump cycles, etc. I previously used 0.8, but in last year's system, it turned out to be too conservative. I think, so I bumped that to 0.85. Now, and that matches basically our peak production from last year. So that's how we determine. And then going from red to yellow, it's basically, it's not 20%. There's basically 20% safety factor, which matches the extra. So that's what do we think the system can produce ideal conditions? That is the red, yeah.
That's the 85%.
Yeah, that's the starting point.
Yeah, the top. And then this 800
is the yellow part.
Where you don't.
Where we've been operating.
You want to try it. And this with 3.6 keeps us
in the yellow.
In the yellow until
2036.
Yeah. 2036, we hit the...
Yeah, we're getting back to the red.
We're in the red. So this expansion, 3.6, this takes us to 3.6.
Yeah. Running flat out under ideal conditions, not losing.
With only a 2% growth rate.
And a 2% growth rate. Utilizing a heavy use here. Obviously, there's so many different ways to approach these projections. This is obviously the simple one.
The decision we need to get to is, does it make sense to split into two bid, like bid this and then bid this?
So I think we've talked, I think structuring the bid with an alternate, I think is very little downside. And I think, Alan, your opinion is likely going to add significant or maybe noticeable costs, as if we just did it as a lump sum bid.
A big set of risk.
My thought is doing it in this way allows us to still bid the project at least to get price. Not 100% price certainty. Not too, but, so, yeah, maybe a strong word. But
can I ask a question about the alternate bid? So let's say it's 42 million and 8 million just around. So it's 50, we get to 50 million. Would we expect a bid for everything at once to bid 50 million then? Like, we don't think there's a component because it's all, we're not saying there's a time element or phasing. It's just tell us how much this piece costs and this piece costs, but they should all, in theory, should have added up to the same number.
Correct. All right. I think if we didn't have as clean of a scenario, if we had complexity, we were asking, and there's been a recent example where it was a challenging bid for the bidders because it's all fresh in their mind, where there was multiple alternative bid items and then multiple configurations, and the bidders were like, I don't really understand what's going on here. And whenever they don't understand something, they want to cover their butts. So they add money. Whenever there's uncertainty, they add money to cover that. And so for how clean this is and how simple we're making it, there isn't any of that going on. You're getting just as
well. Get the end cost. It's just in two pieces. Okay. That was
you know, you get the costs and make the real decision.
So Steve just kind of walked through a couple of.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah.
Okay.
So let's
pull up total projection comparison that Sam had done while I was out of town, just to kind of get what he was talking about. When we went to the Withia originally, this was the number we were using as total cost of the project. Then we had $2 million of a contingency and financing costs and things like that. When the 60% came in, we thought, okay, it's higher, but we can probably still pull it off. Because under this scenario, we were only going to borrow 34 of the 38 million from Wikia. So we were picking up 4 million. We're going to pick up a little bit more impact fees. And we thought, well, we could probably still pull this off. Now, when this comes in, we know we can't pull it off with the financing we've arranged. If the costs really come in at, you know, 50 million here and 58 million here. So just kind of as a setup, this is where we were when we got the Withia loan. Fortunately, we'd already built in some contingency and maybe would have gotten us here. We could have probably gotten here and it would have been tight, but we could have done it. Now we can't get there. Okay, so then let's just go to my, and I'm sorry, I was
hang on, just remember that the below the 50 million that 275 is spent, the 3.8 is spent.
Yeah.
There's not a contingency, a construction contingency.
No, but we've already spent those $2.
We spent most of this, almost all of this.
The contingency is included in the 9%. It's not.
Well, it's up here. It's in each one of these
but
lines.
Not the change order contingency.
Not the change order.
My construction is identifying that there's not change order contingency.
Okay. So with that in mind, let's just go to, like I said, I'm sorry I was out of town, but I've come back in, been running the model today. So the planning to obtain another $10 million in funding, just to make sure that if the bids come in 42 and 8, we can do it kind of thing. And then we don't have to worry about all of this. We do it. Mm-hmm. Borrowing $10 million at 5% on a 20-year amortization, about $800,000 a year, 5.25, 5.5. This is kind of what we're hoping, looking what we could get if we did a direct placement. The reason we're leaning towards a direct placement, several reasons. Bonding would not allow refinancing for 10 years. The whole reason we haven't refinanced our current direct placement is because interest rates are still high. So we don't want to get locked in at high interest rates for 10 years. Withia has been willing to talk and would probably do it, but it's a longer process with them, which might throw up the bidding and more expensive because there's all this more legal stuff to it. So if we do the direct placement, we can do it with Bank of Utah. Capital One is doing some. Brian Baker sent us the name of a couple others, one back east, that are doing direct placements right now. So it's fast, it's cheap, the interest rate's higher, but we can refinance it like the Bank of Utah anytime. So the idea would be probably once rates come down, we roll it all into a bond, we get an interest rate we like, we refinance $18 million here and this additional $10 million. what it does to rate increases. I was updating expenses today for projections for the end of the year, updating usage based on what we've seen. 2027, if we have to bite off the 800,000, we're probably looking at a rate increase of 8 to 9%. I would advocate that would be probably across the board, because I don't know if we could mess with putting that into the high tier zone. I think we need to have a little more surety in that money coming in. 28 to 32, we're 5 to 6%. 20, 33, we're probably 7 to 8%.
On top of our increases we're already anticipating?
No, this is the new increase.
Okay.
I think they can stay in single digits. We get tight here. When we do the direct replacement, maybe we play around with this a little bit and say, hey, can we only pay interest for the first year?
Could we move any more of it?
We would have to relook at the impact fee to adjust it based on these new numbers.
The impact fee would be higher, so we might collect more.
So with a higher impact fee, those would be the rate increases?
Impact fees... They're you know, well, 100 to 120 a year, you can't guarantee they're coming in. The one you don't want to count on making your debt covenant ratio on impact fees, because if something happened and you don't collect them, there's no getting them, kind of thing. So it's kind of, if they're nice to have, you budget them, but you usually don't budget them aggressively.
The current with you we have is maxed out, right? That's this plan.
That's with okay. Borrowing all the $38 million and borrowing the $10 million. Okay. So if we go down a little bit, you can see kind of how this plays out. So right now in 2026, all our debt payments, bonds, we were raising, everything is $4.8 million. 2027, now we're adding about $800,000. So it jumps to $5.6 million. It stays there because remember the whole reason we did WIFI in the first place is that we get a kick to the can.
Yeah.
Until 5 years after substantial completion. So our first WIFI payment comes due in 2033, so we're a jump. It kind of correlates here. We're kind of building during all these years to be able to get here. The nice thing is the 2019 bond finishes in 2034, so we've dropped that back down to 6.4. When we do this, we could probably go down to like a 3, 4% rate increase. It's just enough to keep up with inflation. Let's go down a little bit more because I think it's kind of an important factor to just – as a board for you to be aware. Right now, when we began 2026, we had $44 million in debt. We pay off about $3.2 million in principal every year. So we add the WIFI, we add this $10 million, so we'll add about $48 million over the next 2 years. So we are going to basically double our debt position. That'll probably hurt some of our stuff with Fitch in that our customer to debt ratio will go down. We may get downgraded. So when we do actually go to bond, we may not get quite as favorable rates. But,
and Steven, your 8 to 9% projections, you're also relying on receiving income from Weber Basin or wholesale water.
No,
okay.
Not because we don't have any coming until 2029. The interesting thing, if you go back up, Chris, sorry about this. Our first year with Weber Basin, we get about $867,000 in 2029. So they, in a way, will be paying for the $10 million loan for those years that we have it on the books, because that's how much revenue it means. And that also means how much revenue our customers don't have to generate. But
what's that from Weber Basin?
Selling it to Summit Water.
The wholesale.
It was on
the table. They put it back.
Correct. When we put it back on, we took it off for a few years because the 500 was coming off. Our growth had gone. We thought, okay, the treatment plant's going to take 2 or 3 years to complete, but by 2029, we should have water to sell again. And that helps alleviate some of the weight on our own customers. But so the 8 and 9%, I don't count any of the Weber Basin because there's no Weber Basin money in 27. So 28 might be a 5, 6. This is kind of early. It moves with usage, obviously. So I guess I like the bid alternative because at least we get some pricing. And if the base comes in low and the alternate comes in low, we can do everything, keep in single digits, which has always been in something we've wanted to do. Impact fees over time, what will happen is we probably won't have as many impact fee projects going forward because now we'll have source. We've got tanks. You know, repair and replace can't be impact fee. So basically we'll use impact fees to pay the debt. We'll help pay the debt over the years coming forward. But unfortunately, our current customers will feel a little bit of it for a few years until we start collecting impact fees again.
28 to 32 is 5% increase per year.
During that time. Because basically you have to plan 3 to 4% just because of inflation growth and then a little bit. So that should be pretty safe. And so, yeah, they'll grow. Rates will grow. There's no denying that, but we should be able to keep it into where it's not a shock factor, let's say. Now, some people might feel a shock if they use a lot of water because $63 that we're at right now for 1,000 adds up pretty fast for some of those big users. So that's good. Even though back when we were in drought in 2022, our highest rate was 75. So our current rates are almost like our drought rates in 2022. So we've really kind of tried to push them conservation. So what I'm hearing tonight, I'm liking the base bid because we do have this WIFIA money and the base bid would get us years. I'm really hoping alternate bid comes in. This $10 million is more than enough to pay for it. We can get it all done and just be up and running in 2029. I hope we can kind of hold closer to this number, right? Because, I think we'll get this money, but we're going to direct replacement when we go to do bond, and Fitch will probably downgrade us a little bit. But that's kind of where we've gotten ourselves to with this project now. So. Lisa, are you still there? Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I'm here. I just wanted to say, I guess, just as far as if we do want to move forward with this $10 million direct placement, we have, with this $10 million, gone over the parameters resolution that was originally approved by council. And maybe you've already talked about this. Sorry, I jumped on late.
No, I know it's on the agenda, but we haven't.
Okay.
But go ahead.
And that's the next line item. So we would need to have you recommend to the county council another parameters resolution, because we only did 43 million, not only did, but at the time, 43 million was the number that we anticipated was going to be a max. We thought we had plenty of contingency, but we've gone over that. So like Steve said, I think we need to add another, I didn't put a number in here. I said additional. If Steve thinks we need to go borrow another 10 million, and the other thing that is a little concerning to me is not knowing what we're going to get into when we get into potential change orders. So thinking about that, it is a remodel. You know, we've got a small space that could have some tough situations once we start digging in there. So what do we think might be a comfortable number to not have to come back and do this again, because this will require a public hearing. So we will need to hold a 6 p.m. meeting, go over the project, go over where the changes have been and where we're at currently. The public can weigh in, and we do have 30 days that we need to make that available to the public. So that's why we kind of wanted to have this meeting as quickly as possible, because we are running up against the bid date, at which time we wanted to make a decision, but we need to have all those dominoes fall in line before we can make that decision if we did decide we wanted to go the full project. So that's a little bit about the steps that we need to take in order to do the direct placement.
On the direct placement, what the direct placement is, there are less steps to it than in your normal bonding. It's still a bond. I thought that with private placement, getting a rating was optional.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to get a rating, but we would have to report it to Fitch.
So on future ones.
So when we get reviewed by Fitch, they probably say, So they won't have to rate us right now. It's if next fall when they do their annual rating, or if we say, hey, rates drop, they're at 4%, we want to do the whole thing, can you give us a rating? But it won't be triggered until next fall, or August is usually when they ask. And then, and I, WIFIA didn't seem to have any heartburn over us borrowing additional money, whether it was with them or direct placement, we would just have to get their permission to.
Sorry, but I wanted to take a quick break.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we can take a 5 minute.
You bet.
There is a little food. Sorry it's late, but help yourself.
We're at 43. I mean, so Lisa, are you thinking 50 million parameter, 55 just to be safe?
I think at least 10 million, at least a 53 to be safe, right?
Yeah, that'd probably be good. I think 53 because we kind of have five.
Hang on.
Yeah,
let's get everyone back in the room.
Okay.
Sorry, Lisa.
Sorry, I asked.
Okay.
Okay, so now that we've gotten all the bad news from Steve and the bad news from engineering, we need to decide what we want to send as a recommendation to Summit Camp. I guess I'm grateful that we are not going to have to do any double-digit increases. I'm grateful that Steve thinks he can get the bonding. But I would like to know how you guys feel about the price of the project.
Price increases are never good for something this size.
Yeah.
Especially if it's pretty big. So that was the first thing that caught my eye. So it's like, now I understand more of the meeting, but the question would have been like, as a customer, like what changed? Like how was it far off scope or whatever? But I think we're good there. Is there any lost? If say we don't do the JC and the solids thing right now, or whatever we're calling the base bid, or the ultimate bid, if we're calling it that, or whatever.
Yeah, the ultimate.
Yeah, that's base ultimate. Bid. Yeah. Is there any lost opportunity of not doing it? Like, would we have saved money doing it all versus cutting out those two parts? It sounds like pretty much no, but I just want to see if that's something. Because then the other question is, well, if you kick the can down the road, why not? Why didn't you do everything when you know you're eventually going to have to? So just be prepared to answer that. Are we losing? Are we throwing money away by not doing it all right now?
Yeah, so the 7.3 today is going to be 10.
It will be more.
Yes. And I do understand the changing out of the actual charcoal and stuff like that. It is an overall operating cost that will be reduced, so that's a plus. But those are really probably my only comments, I guess.
I mean, not to get into the weeds, but that the GAC, the additional space, is a giant hole behind the plant. Mm-hmm. It is a huge excavator that somebody would have to remobilize for equipment for to dig this. And that's, you know, if it gets pushed out, it's not going to be the 7 million, it's going to be the 10 to do it. So,
so part of the rock excavation is for this additional part of it. Mm-hmm.
What do the rates look like at the end of 2037?
They should stabilize after that.
No, just as far
as... What would like an average bill look like?
The cumulative result of the projected rate increases.
I need a spreadsheet really quick. Or compounded interest.
Yeah.
Let's see, the average customer bill right now over the years, $125. So $125 times 1.8 is $135 next year. Times 42.
So it's $7 to $10 a month. So $120, $150 annually, just rough number.
Yeah, every year it just keeps going up from that. So, I mean, 2033. Yeah, bills are basically not quite double. Time and did all that because you know 9%, 5%, 5%, 6%, 7%. So yeah,
and I guess this just wanted to also chime in too. This also assumes we don't need to issue any additional debt, right, Steve? I mean, this is if we were for any other repair and replacement, any other regulatory issue that may arise. Any other need of the district that is not in here for those years that Steve has shown.
Yeah, the next time in the model that I have is borrowing money is 2036 after this run to do whatever we need to do there. And I can't remember those 10 or 15 million.
Yes, because so you wouldn't need to borrow anything for 10 years.
Well, as long as there's no catastrophic.
As long as there's no catastrophic. We could do our basic repair and replace projects, a couple million dollars worth of capital projects every year. But, like, if we had to replace a $5 million tank or wanted to do $10 million worth of line and someone park all at once, we wouldn't have that kind of money. We didn't. And with,
thanks, Joel.
Or Silver Springs. But, yeah. So it would just, none of this includes borrowing any additional money till beyond 2034.
We're going to get our tank.
Oh.
Sorry.
Wait, me again? Okay. Or what are we talking
about? No, I just, I'm trying to, Bill's the only one that's throwing out some thoughts on it.
I was just waiting for a moment. But
you have four.
I feel like the 10 potentially isn't high enough. We completely missed on our 30%, which we use for estimating what we needed to have for capital. I don't have much confidence that these numbers are real right now. So I'm really hesitant about moving forward.
What happens if it is higher than
at that point? We've been off the whole way in a very significant sense, but 30%. And that really put us in the hole. This whole process is in a bind because of that.
I agree. I think that, and it's, I think it needs a construction contingency to change. I'm not seeing that in there. Mm-hmm. Seems that's those things happen,
and there's no chance bids could be under what we proposed or what's being kind of thought through.
There's very good chance that it's under.
Okay,
that's why it's in, that's why the bid numbers are
realistic or whatever. Yeah, that's another thought that came to mind. Can't really count on that though.
So could we wait going to going up for another bond until after the bid process takes place?
We could, but we couldn't contract. If it, let's say the bid came in and we said, okay, the bids came in at $46 million, but we only have $40 million dedicated to it. We couldn't sign off on the second part. So it would delay that. Does that make sense? Like we can't sign a contract without knowing where the funds are going to come.
Yeah.
And so, then if it takes us 90 days to find, you know, maybe they won't hold the price for that one.
That way.
So it's the cart before the horse. We could get the additional amount approved, but not act on it. We could take the bids and reject them. We're not obligated to proceed until we're authorized to proceed. So again, we're kind of at a crossroads of, do we try to get more money and hope things come in? Do we just live within what we have? And what's the consequence of that? So that's kind of the direction we're asking. And, you know, to your point, Ian, if we think it's going to be $10 million more and you're willing to go forward, do we ask for 15 just in case and we don't have to come back? Then we, of course, would have to secure that additional money, and then Steve would have to model it. And what would that impact be?
Yeah, if we couldn't push it out further, we would be looking at probably double digit.
So if it goes over 10, we'd be looking at double digit.
If we, let's say we borrow 15, we would be, because we're in that 8-9, another 5 million, so another 400,000 a year is about 1 or 2%. So we'd be right there, 10.
Yeah.
10.
We could borrow 10 and then delay other capital projects for a period of time. That's just, you know, kicking other things down the road.
How much of this has gotten back to the county council?
Nothing yet.
I'm also feeling like this is a big enough shift where potentially having their insight would be helpful, at least to me. On, like, what are their goals for this effort? I mean, is it to enable growth at these projections moving forward, or potentially are they not comfortable with double-digit increases in the future? I mean, some insight from them would be helpful.
I can set up a meeting with Janice and Roger and Shane and Karen and...
I mean, I guess looking for your opinion, do you think this is a
big deal? Do we already have the entitlements for the growth that's, you know?
Well, so part of it would be to allow Promontory to build out, which we're committed to. We also know that there are other projects within the county that are county sponsored that are going to need water.
Are we committed to those?
We are not committed to those. And in our August board meeting, you're going to see an annexation. It's an applicant for that Rasmussen Road project.
That's affordable housing? But that's not the one at the outlet.
No. No.
Our master plan projections, we only consider areas of the district that we're essentially committed to serve by the next. So not a Dakota Pacific, or whatever they're called. Six Ridge Partners. Given those numbers, we're in the 60s.
Sorry, what's off?
2060.
Where the district's somewhere in the 60s percentage.
Oh, sorry.
65% built out. Only considering areas with obligations. They can all be from the parties. So, there's all these projects that are outside of the scope. We just look at what's in the district legally annexed in the special services.
Yeah, I think opinion on the Dakota Pacific or whatever her name is, and Rasmussen Road, all of those from the county. What's their intent moving forward? It seems like their I'm assuming their expectation is they want all of that growth to be enabled by Mountain Regional. And they would support moving ahead with this in a lot of ways. But
I don't know that either, but my guess is they would prefer this project over the East Canyon project, which is 3 times more expensive, and whoever calls for water first bears that burden until someone else comes on.
Right, so this potentially would put off an importation project. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Because we would then have a little surplus water. Park City still has some surplus water. So I believe that is true.
Okay, so that's certainly a benefit.
I think in terms of Wine Dolly, which is the Rasmussen project, and
about Vince Christie, maybe that's
not Vince. Oh, it's
sorry.
But I mean with the county's Wine Dolly project, which is an affordable housing project, as well as the overall Dakota Pacific project there with the county. I think the county would look to Mountain Regional to service those entitlements because those are specific to the county. I mean, the county is 160 workforce housing units at Kimball Junction, as well as Pine Dolly, whatever that turns out to be. They would be looking for that.
And
are they in the master plan currently?
No.
They're not in the district?
No. The only thing that's in our master plan is the parcels that are currently annexed into the district.
Yeah, they'd have to annex into the district. And they'd have to, with Dakota Pacific, they'd have to bring the line over from the other side of 224.
So I guess the question to the county would be, do you want us to limp along for 10 years or do we rip off the Band-Aid and build the whole thing?
And the issue with that, the current customers kind of take the brunt now for potential future development. That's the part that's a little difficult.
True.
Yeah. Which is starting to, raise the ire of a lot of long-term residents. That question's come up a bunch. Like, why do existing customers need to tighten their belts so that future development can come in? Mm-hmm. And they've been paying all the bills all along.
Yeah.
I've heard that from numerous community members that I've interacted with. And I don't have a good answer for it. No.
It's just preparing for the future in a way,
Even if it's not the tightened belt asking them to conserve, it's asking them to have higher bills.
Financial burden.
Exactly. Yeah.
But everything's higher. Your property taxes are higher. That's living in a highly desirable area. Why would the fear not need? It's all like, or you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just saying we're.
Ouch, Andy.
I don't live here.
He lives in Midway. Midway's totally different.
Whoever develops in terms of county will have to pay your impact fee. So make sure that your impact fees are up to date.
Few years of rate payments. For many years, because indefinite rate payments.
The theory would be that more of those impact fees in the future would pay the debt and not be going to new projects. So future rate increases, the theory is, would be smaller because we'd already be getting this $1 million. Let's say it's $1 million a year in impact fees. That goes right to the bottom line. None of that gets used for new projects. It gets used to pay debt. So it does put the burden on current customers that supposedly would be paid back by developments in the future. I don't know if we can, that's theory. That's not how it necessarily would play out, but that would be the thought.
Do you feel like we would generate $1 million a year in impact fees?
We'll be pretty close to that this year. And that's about what we historically have averaged, almost $1 million.
Eve or Sam, do you remember what percentage of this project is impact fee eligible versus, because not all of it is for growth. There's a portion of it that is just would be attributable to existing customers. Do you remember what that percentage is in the IFFP?
I'll pull it up. I don't remember. But that's a good, really good point, Lisa. I was kind of thinking the same thing. I mean, we're obviously this doubles plus the capacity of the plant. A lot of these things are safety issues. Or
yep.
These membrane racks are at the end of their life. So actual membrane modules are certainly at the end of their life right now.
Wait, yeah. Safety can't go into an impact the eligible category?
I will pull up how we broke it
that's,
down.
That's looked at as existing deficiencies.
When it's upgraded to the new capacity,
you can, charge a portion of it for the new capacity.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Stay in that 2 minutes.
Well, while you're pulling that up, can I just say a couple things?
Please do.
I understand the lack of confidence in the numbers given that track record.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not proud of that. And I understand that. Who you said, is there any chance the bids are going to come in less than this? There is a lot of uncertainty. There's recent projects not around here can have the difference between the low bid and the second low bid, 20% difference, which just is crazy. But it can happen. So, let's just say our estimate's $50 million. If this came in at $45 million, I would say we nailed our estimate. Mm-hmm. It could come in at $40 million. And I'd say we overestimated. We were way too conservative. But and I'm not making any promise. I'm just saying estimate could come in at $40 million.
Yeah.
And
my criticism isn't meant entirely for you. It's been from my experience working on large mining projects where at present, we haven't had anything come in on cost in the last 5 years. Yeah. Not even close. So it's the industry as a whole, the tools they're using for doing estimation don't work for the current paradigm that we're in. So that's not a you thing. That's the current state of the world.
Yeah.
But the trajectory of it is you're probably going to be low. So that's my fear is if that trajectory proves out, we might be not asking for enough. We might not be able to cover this and put ourselves in a hard spot and put our rate a much larger increase than anticipated.
Understood. The other thing, we talked about this a little bit, and I don't know how much it helps, but it's at this point, we're planning on having the bidder. We always have the bidders hold their numbers, commit to holding their numbers for X number of days. And our default is 60. I talked to our estimators, and they were like, these day and age, you can, if you make them hold it for 90 days, that's not going to show up on bid day. That's a reasonable number. So I don't know how much hopeful that is, but we're going to ask them to hold their pricing for 90 days. And if you needed more time at that point and you had a selected low bidder and you called them up and said, hey, I need another 30 days, can you extend your pricing? Chances are they. So there is some element of a time in there. I don't know if it's enough.
Is that just because the environment for building is getting a little easier?
Yeah, those numbers have always been there. There was a while over the last, since COVID when that became even harder. And between COVID and supply chain and tariffs and all that happy stuff, which is still kind of around, it would have been harder to ask them to do that. And now we're kind of back into, I'd say, more of a normal phase. So there is an element of time in there that might help. And then I would say to you, if Mabel bid day and look at these bid numbers, then it's on top of that number that I would suggest. That's where you add a change or a contingency. And you'll certainly want to do that then, whether or not you plan on that and add it on top of all this stuff, I'm not sure. But certainly when we're evaluating bid day numbers, you want to build in and 10%.
Right. Just if the bids came in at your estimate, we would want to.
Oh, I'd say whatever the bids come in at 30 million or 40 million or 50 million, that's you're going to sign a contract to do that. There's going to be change orders on top of that.
And that's so, where at least 5% to whatever they bid.
Yeah.
So if they bid 30 million, you got to have them.
At least 5% on top of that. Kind
of like I found it.
Yeah, so I just want to RFP where we assign 0% of the project dollars to existing customers. So, and then the game you play with the impact fee is then you take project cost and schedule and you decide how much of the project cost is necessary within the next 10 years. And we're saying 22.8%. The project cost is necessary to be built into the impact fee for the next 10 years. And that never gets handed off to Steve and finance side and you've got the impact fee. So where we are saying all the project is necessary. Impact fee it's necessary for growth. So we can't do growth without safety. So I guess it's kind of like what we're doing.
Or another way to think of it is only the 10% or the 22.8%, the 10-year growth would be added to the actual B that we would charge. 77% would get added into the next, because you can't add, we could use impact fees to pay for it all, but only the 10-year window can be used to add to the current.
To calculate
how much you're charging at the moment.
But we could use impact because it's all allocated to future growth. The entire project have $50 million in debt.
Yeah. But it could, every impact fee we get could be used for it. It's just that the fee is only based on how much we would use up in 10 years for projections.
But you're not accounting for the impact fees coming in your current estimates on the rate increases?
There's a little bit. I mean, we've dedicated like 2.3 million of impact fees for it. We have some on hand, but we also are paying for 224 and the well and a few other things. So we've basically allocated all the impact fees we currently have out. As we get in more over the next couple of years, there are calculations in the rate increases that we would get $700,000 or $800,000 of impact fees a year. If those were lower, rate increases would be higher. If they were higher, rate increases would be lower.
It's one of the things the state is doing, and Steve's got to do more of a detailed report on the impact fees, is how much money was spent on this project from what funds. And so he has to justify what we've collected to make sure it does what we're supposed to, or what we told them it was supposed to do.
And to Steve's point, our impact fee eligible projects in our capital improvement plan are mostly completed. New well, mostly completed. This project, of course. Future internet connection done. Improvements to Old Branch Pump Station done. Two transmission lines. Upgrading the pump door water line done. Solar array. Signal done. New building done. So, outstanding impact fee eligible projects in our capital improvement plan include the plant and transmission lines that are related to getting water from the plant to the system. That's it. Not that that's it. The rest are.
So is there anything from a procedural, like do we have to update the IFFP then? Or we would get the bid and we would know what our cost is and then we would go through that process?
We could, for sure. We could do it even off of estimates. That's what we did last time. We've just got to notice it,
there's some steps. You have to notice that you're going to update your IFFP. You have to notice you're going to do an impact fee analysis and things like that. So it takes some months to get the new impact fee in place, but we could be using the $50 million number instead of a $35 million number. So we should see a bump in the impact fee, you know, the average impact fee, but by 10 or 15%, let's say.
We did an estimate. Yeah. We got to start.
So we could start that process pretty quickly, but there's some notices and some actually doing the work. It's a notice and then actually doing the work kind of thing too. Because we kind of did an interim one, when we got the first jump, we kind of said, oh, wow, this is going to cost more. We can get more in our impact fee. So we did that.
Yeah.
But now, so we could do that again, but I don't think we could just do the little process again. We probably have to do a full-blown one because we kind of got away with just doing an interim one.
And we paid when we've already done some of those other projects that come off the list. So we need to expand the list again.
Okay.
Because you have to have things on there that you're going to be working towards in the future.
To that point, even the additions of the stuff at the treatment plant, since now all this other stuff's done, it couldn't be added in. We may not have a net real large increase because they wouldn't be part of the calculation.
I don't understand that part. This is such an expensive project. Why would we not be able to? Why would the other projects be?
It's the total number.
So let's say we use $50 million. All our projects added up to $50 million. We use that to calculate the impact fee. Now that $50 million, we've completed $10 million of them. So it's down to $40 million. So we add back in another $10 or $15 million for the impact fee. And our total sum we're going to justify is about the same. It's to the point of we've done the well. We've done a few things. So we've spent the impact fees we had. So you can't count those in a future calculation
because they fall off the list.
They fall off the list. That's a good way to put it. You kind of keep adding new projects to the top and things fall off the list. So your total number doesn't always keep going up and up and up.
And what we're adding with the Signal Hill Water Treatment Plant isn't as much as those projects?
No, I mean, it'd be more. It'd be $15 million, but we may have taken $7 million off. So we won't get the full benefit of the $15
million. It might be a net of $8
million. We might get a net of $8 million increase in our total project costs.
But we're thinking lean the needle, more percentage of impact fee goes to this project because it's really new customers coming on. This is being built for them in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and that's where we'll have the debt, and you can use impact fees to pay for the debt for an impact fee projects.
Okay.
So every year I could say, hey, we got $1 million in the impact fees and moving that all over to pay debt.
Yeah.
So.
So I can reach out to the council, to Shane and Roger and Candace, and see what their feeling is, and then report back. I don't know when I can, when they're available. By doing that, it just delays the timeline that we currently have set out.
Maybe we go through. So what's the timeline right now? Are we ready to go to bid as soon as we get approval from the council? Or what's the...
So right now we're qualifying potential bidders.
And to Andy's point earlier, several people have made this point. We could go out to bid and then just say they all came in over budget, we're not accepting any. But we'd at least know, instead of this is still kind of guesswork.
Then we're kind of square one, right?
Yeah.
If that were to happen.
Yeah, then it'd be like, okay, well, the actual bids came in at this. So we know we need this much money. Let's go. Do we go find that money? Or do we narrow the project to just kind of this base portion,
or something
else. Or if the base comes in low enough, we say, hey, the base is 36, we've got $38 million from WIFIA, let's get going on the base bid and work on the how much funding do we have to do the alternate bid, the GAC, let's say, in the belt press. So I'm thinking there's not a negative to pursuing getting bids, but I want to hear other people's opinions. Am I missing something? Dave? No? I mean, it just might be that maybe we burn a bridge. Like, well, we give you a bid and then we don't take any. But I think they'd still probably be willing to bid again once we revamped and said, okay, we realize this is more and we've gone and got the money, rebid, please, kind of thing. Sam? And that's a gut feeling I'm having.
And we're going to be at the point where we have 100% plans, right? We're going to be to a point where we have a package that is ours. It doesn't go away. It's ours. If it doesn't happen now, and for funding reasons or whatever else, right? And if it happens in a year, we have that package that we can still go with.
You could probably do a private placement in, what, 75 days?
Yeah, I think
so. Okay, so we could bid in two separate sections, and if we have to have the second section leg 75 to 90 days behind, we could do that.
As long as the contractor held the pricing.
Yeah, as long as they held the price.
And 90 days seems like, from what I've heard, is kind of the outer limit. You'll see them hold it for 90 days, but not usually much longer than that. Right?
I would suggest we put 90 days, hold the bids for 90 days, and that is not going to impact their pricing on bid day. And then if 90 days, if you're approaching 90 days and we're like, wow, we are making progress, but we need another 30, you could ask the contractor, can we have another 30? And they likely will, or if they won't, they'll apply some
surcharge of a few percent.
But I think a 90-day placement in the bid docs to say, hey, bidders, we're planning on holding this for 90 days, isn't going to make the project more expensive.
But what we need to do is update the parameters resolution. We need to have the public hearing. So we have to get the council to approve it. We have to have the public hearing. So we have to meet all of those time frames, which, Lisa, is that a total of 60 days?
We would just have to have our board recommend it to county council, in that unfortunately we're in the budget holiday season, the time we're looking at that, so you'd lose a little bit of I don't know, it just might be busy, but I think you could get on the council's calendar, and from there, once you notice and you've notified your customers and the public that you are having a public hearing, that starts the 30-day clock. And then we have 30 days, and within that 30-day window, we have the public hearing, and people can speak to the project. And then, like I said, after that 30-day window is closed, then we have at least had the permission and approval from the council and the public to secure the funding, and then we could secure the funding. I don't know how quickly Brian Blaker can do the private placement. I know we did it with Bank of Utah. I'm trying to remember about how long that took from the time we did the parameters to the time we closed. I think it was fairly short, maybe 30 days. So I would think a 60 or 90 day would probably be doable.
And can we get, is this a big enough issue that we can get preferential treatment with county council, like getting on their agenda?
Come on.
Maybe if Karen asks, I can ask.
This seems like a major issue to the entire community.
Well, I think we're going up against Basin Rec's $150 million, so this is a drop in a bucket.
Don't get me started.
Yeah. Right. So, the difference between us and them, this is something that we need. Whereas the other is the difference between a want and a need.
Yep.
So I think we need a decision from the board tonight to move forward in a direction. If we parcel it into two phases, then Alan's going to have to do some redesigning that takes out that GAC building and whatever processes are involved there, and it's going to have to be designed to plug and play at some time in the future. So from his perspective, and Alan, I don't mean to put words in your mouth,
good so far.
But I think so there's some direction that needs to be given there, and I think we need direction on, do we start down the road of getting on the council agenda? You know, I will talk to Roger and Candace and Shane, getting a flavor for them. They could kill the whole thing, but I think they see the need for water.
But the having base bid and the additive alternate pretty easy.
That is, but that wasn't the base bid and the alternate is easy. If it's right. Plan on two separate packages and we have to strip out the thing, that's what takes.
Let's clarify that. I don't think we're talking about phasing more than 90 days. I think we're talking about a base bid and an alternate bid.
But and that alternate bid would be phase one, phase two.
It's different. A phase one and a phase two is you're going to award this one now and phase two in a year. Or two or three. Whereas we're talking bid this, okay, we can accept your base bid and get going.
Right, but if we don't do both at the same time, Corollo has to redesign it as a standalone with an entire thing because you've got to take out the GAC.
Yes, right. If we wanted to wait until 2036 to do the second phase, that does take.
So that just has to be designed.
I'll just say right now, I would say that recommendation on the table is let's get to bid day with a base bid and additive bid concept, and when bid day and so that means we're finishing our design. And we're highlighting and identifying. It's more complicated than that, but it's not that much more complicated. We can follow that schedule. We can identify this bit is the base bit, and this bit is the added bit. And we march down that path, and bid day comes. And this isn't a phase. We're not talking about phasing yet. This is just, we have one bid day. It includes the base bid and the added bid item. And if you can afford both the base bid and the additive bid item, you're going to award to that bidder the overall project and do everything in one shot for the price that they identified, you know, plus whatever changes happen. And it only becomes, if we're marching down that path, if we're marching down the path of doing the additive bid concept, then the bifurcations start on bid day. When bids come in and you can afford the whole thing, that's the scenario just went through. Just awarding the whole thing and you're telling that contractor to do everything and they can do it however they want. They're going to structure and schedule the project and do the whole project. If you look at a project and on the other extent of the other extreme, it's like, wow, these costs are way expensive. We can't even afford the base bid. We got to stop and figure out what's going on. You cancel the bids and now you're back at ground. Now you figure out what to do and that can take any number of different things. The middle ground is, I'm glad we did the added a bid item because I can afford the base bid, maybe without going out to all this different stuff. This base bid is something I can do, and I'm willing to figure out, and I'm going to pull the trigger. I'm going to tell my contractor, whether it's 60 or 90 days, that I'm going to award this bidder the base bid, and I'm going to figure out the future project later. Then you have this phased project. Now you're telling this contractor, bid the base bid, don't worry about this added bid item, and you can then figure out when you're going to build the GAC and this added thing. You have the luxury of, we have gone through our design. The design for that piece isn't going to change. If you do that project soon after, you know, on the heels of this one, there's going to be some cleanup and there's going to be some packaging for that design to make it its own standalone project. So there will be
design costs, whether it's us or someone else. But that is a separate future project that you can deal with on its own separate points. But all three of those scenarios start with, let's finish this design and get to bid day with an evidence.
Yeah, and I think to me that's a no-brainer. So I don't know if we have to do a motion on that or anything, because that's separate from funding it, right?
So that's separate than item three. But it's
the one thing is, if let's say the base bid and the alternative bid come in at $47 million.
That's after we decide to send out two bids. Like, isn't the first decision do we decide to send out? Bid designs, the base and alternate.
The base and the alternate. Let's say the base and the alternate.
Is that already given?
I thought we had to decide if we're doing that.
Yeah. I know. I thought it was easy, but now I can tell you, at our own
risk, our design team is proceeding, assuming we're doing an additive bid.
All right, so that's a given. Let's just move on. You might not want to approve that
until you approve it. It's at our own risk, but we don't want to compromise that schedule. So we're going. So as long as that's okay and we're doing the right thing, that's sort of maybe one decision made. We're going to bid this thing with an additive bid item. And
perfect.
That can be decided now.
So we've decided that. Let's say those both come in and we like the pricing, but we're only authorized to borrow at this point, or we've allocated $44 million that we can spend. But to combine them, they're 47, so we need $3 or $4 million more.
Yeah.
We would need to start the parameter resolution so that then it's approved, so then we can go into the director.
I'm not saying I want to do this, but if we wait until then, we technically have potential 90 days to make to do that.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's a good idea, but
it could be a little tight,
yeah.
But we could. But there's no harm
other than the amount, right?
Yeah, it's like raising our credit limit with the account.
And not using it. Yeah.
And not using it. Because we've asked for a $43 million credit limit. We're going to say, hey, give us a $53 million credit limit, and then we can borrow, you know, we won't borrow that much, but we can borrow up to it if we need.
It gives us flexibility come that decision day.
Yes.
Yeah, because if you don't do the parameters resolution now,
it pushes
everything else back, right? Then. You're waiting at the mercy of the county and more meetings to get to
that. Or you're sitting on a bid for 90 days when they could start work day two.
We're losing schedule.
Yeah.
We're losing schedule.
Okay.
Do you spend any political capital or goodwill with folks if you decide right now, the cleanest thing would be is if you could wait to pull any triggers until bid day. And then if you have to pull triggers, you've got 90 days before you have to decide with the bidder what you're going to award.
I'd rather give them 120, 160 days, because if we wait to bid day and we're going into budget season and we're going into the holidays, I'd rather not cram that. I'd rather
be ready.
And what would happen instead if you decide to take this first step? Now, hey, we got this engineer's estimate that things might come in that high. I want to do some contingency planning. I want to be prepared to get the additional funding as quickly as possible. So I'm going to start step one with the county now. And you can tell them, look, we may not need to exercise this, but in case we do, we want their approval in place.
Yeah, I'd rather do that in parallel.
Yeah, in parallel. So then, and that doesn't burn any, that doesn't spend any penalty. If it turns out you don't need it, you haven't.
No harm, no foul.
They've forgotten that they probably approved $43 million last year.
Okay. That seems like a no-brainer.
Because basically, we've got a parameter resolution piece that takes 60 days and a financing piece that takes 75.
If we wait
till bid day, we can't do both of those in 90 days.
Yeah, you can't do the money part without the parameters resolution. So, you can't ask for the money from the lender.
So basically what this does is having that, as soon as we get the bid, we can say, we got the bid, direct placement, you got 75 days to get us money because we have to award it in 90.
Yeah. But we're not locked into anything.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That first step doesn't.
And that would be our first one to use then.
Right.
Yeah, most likely
We might draw some WIFIA down just because they kind of expected the first quarter of 2027, but we will use whatever direct placement money first because they'll want to give that to us. And so we'll be paying interest on it. So we'll want to use that first before we draw
down. Maybe collecting interest on it.
What?
And maybe collecting it.
We'll be collecting interest, kind of like we did on the building where we're collecting all that money that actually helped pay the interest until we got going.
Which means we have to
so, yeah.
But we did okay. Yeah. They caught up and went the other way.
Going forward with a parameters resolution amendment, so which becomes a new parameters resolution, we would then go through and have the 14-day notice, public hearing, the 30-day contest period, and we would just stop there. Is that
okay? And then don't pull the trigger. Then you go a lot faster. Okay.
And then don't do the private placement.
Yes.
Wait till the private placement until we have a bid that we actually want to borrow that money.
Yeah, because we don't know. We wouldn't know what we were borrowing. We wouldn't have a clue yet.
Okay.
So is that the staff's recommendation?
That is my recommendation, that we put everything in place until we get hard numbers. And then that is really decision time. Because right now everything's hypothetical based on estimates. But until the bids come in,
really
it could be $80 million.
Asking to get started with process to get funding.
Correct.
If needed.
We want to make the application. We don't need to draw. Let me just make another comment. You mentioned 2036. That's when we need to have the water available online, ready. So we would probably have to start in 2034.
To do the additive alternative.
To do whatever.
Phase two.
Assuming it's a year, 2 year bid.
Yeah.
We need to give that enough time to get it online.
Yeah.
So the parameters of resolution amendment, we're thinking that's the other thing we need to decide is what that would be, and we're proposing $10 million. I think
we requested 43, we borrowed 38 against.
Okay.
But I think as long as we're going back, that's the conversation I started with Lisa, Will, who's getting food. I think we just asked for another 10. We just bumped the parameter of resolution from 43 to 53. Mm-hmm. And that gives us, because it's just the credit limit, why not ask for more even if you're not going to use it all? Okay.
What if the town's not right?
More than just what
if, the and then you have to go back a second time.
Yeah.
If we have to go back I think Sam and I have had this conversation.
If you're going to ask.
Yeah.
I thought we were going to just get the paperwork started.
We are, but it has to
have a
number. Yeah. It has to have a number. We could go 60. But then, well, never mind.
But yeah, no, Mike, it is putting things in. We're not closing on anything.
But this is the sentence that was going to follow this. Is at some point you pull a plug on it and you just do the safety stuff because we can't spend $80 million to do this. You know, so what's the pull the plug?
How much is Basin Rec spending?
150.
We can spend whatever we want.
But
as long as the board says that.
Well, what are we going to do?
I'm swimming the lakes. Yeah.
Well, that's my opinion. I don't think the council would go for a property tax.
But that's how Basin Rec's paid.
Yeah, but they don't, I mean, they don't collect the same fee. People don't need Basin Rec. People need Mountain Regional. They need the water, right? There's no other alternate source, right? You can go to the Mark, you can go to Basin Rec, you can go to private gym. Waters are totally different. You know, life safety.
You can work out on your steps.
Right. So needs and it's the difference between needs and wants. And I don't know, Steve. I mean, if it's $80 million and we need to maximize what comes out of the river. I mean,
that's why I'm looking for the county's opinion on this. I think they're going to say we don't care what it costs. You have to provide it. That's my guess of what's going to come out.
Well, and I also, again, the looming importation project. You know, I mean, if we could double our capacity up there, that's going to put off an importation project. We do.
At least in my tenure.
And that's all an argument.
I've only got a couple of years left.
Well, you're still a ratepayer.
I'm just still a ratepayer, but I don't want to be here when that happens.
So, if you're willing to make the recommendation, and I don't know what the number is it 10 million? Is it 12 million? Is it 15 million? Do we need to go a little higher? Now, just remember, we've already paid $4 million between the what we paid to Corallo and the $250 for the membrane. We've already spent that money.
So we need to borrow that.
Well, and that I just want to point out on the $58 million, $4 million of that has already been spent. That's where we are so far.
And the current resolution of the county is 38, right?
Steve's disagreeing. We have authorization to borrow 43. We've borrowed or been authorized to borrow 38 from within. The money we've already put in adds to our 20%, because with WIFIA, you can only get 80% from them. The other 20% has to come from us. So even though we've spent that money, that doesn't come out of – that's we're just talking how much we're going to buy. So that's a little different. So the 43, the 58, we don't get to take the 58 and say we've already spent four. If you want to increase
– as far as pulling,
no.
Is that what you're –
No, sorry.
Well, we need to set a number. We're going to ask the county additional that.
So, yeah, are we going to go from 43 to 53?
Where if we go too low, we shoot ourselves in the foot because we'll be doing this again. If we go too high, I guess there's not a real downside other than what are you guys doing over there? That the you know, you're asking for twice as much now. So, I don't know. What is it?
It's
10, 15?
I'd say 15 because I shouldn't say 60 million out loud. But let's say we add 15.
Could you go back to that?
And then we're at 58 million.
There's three charts then.
30, 60,
90. Yeah.
Because if we ask for 58, that'll let us borrow 20.
I think the difference is that the 30 only has so many lines. Well, it only has seven lines. And 90 has a bunch more.
Yeah.
That's it.
You just figured it out.
You just got to erase awesome. The lines.
Maybe just take all of these and start with the right number of lines.
It's mercy and important one. The cost that we will possibly experience during construction through change orders are not in that 58.
It should, that number should be added to this, whatever you're going to run the council. And also any other additional uncertainty. But
that irrigation wet well, promontory will end up paying the cost of that, whether through a short-term financing arrangement or a rate increase.
So right now we've added the county for 43. Okay. So 15 would be get us at the total cost of 58, not counting contingency on there, but again.
And not counting our 20% into the project. Because that means our 20% is just not.
We come back with the bids, and it's, that's really what we're
doing. I don't understand not counting that.
So WIFIA funded, well, I don't know how that would work, because WIFIA funded 80% on the.
Yeah.
So if we increase the price. We only have to worry about 20% on the WIFIA portion?
No, we have to worry about.
The county's approving how much we can borrow. Right?
Correct.
All the direct placement stuff is considered our money, not WIFIA.
It should just be with an 80.
Yeah.
So the 20% can come from stuff that we borrow.
Yeah.
Even though that's part of the WIFIA loan or the.
Yeah. That was part of the deal, but it does. We don't have to have that money sitting around somewhere. We
can and the other thing, too, is we have a $2 million grant from the state.
Which could be part of the contingency, or at least the missing line item.
And then we can't borrow much money for other projects to make up.
Yeah, any other project that we would have in the near term would have to be paid out of excess revenue that gets designated to capital projects. Now, by borrowing this money, it will allow us to still do capital projects in 2027, which will be the line replacement in Summit Park that we've already kicked a couple times. We've already decided we won't buy vehicles in the 26-27 year, which typically we've spent $400,000. So we'll cut other things where we can. But the system, I mean, we've had, in the last 10 days, we've had four or five leaks all over the system. And several of them went overnight. Not all of them were in Summit Park.
But some.
So what I would like to ask the board is to recommend moving forward with a recommendation to the county council to amend the parameters resolution in the amount of $58 million, so $15 million over our current approval. We would then proceed in parallel with getting the parameters resolution, doing all of our noticing, doing the open, the public meeting, get the bids, and then come back and make hard decisions on whether we're going to move forward with the one bid or the bid alternative. In the meantime, I will also ask the county whether they'll support it. I think to Ian's point, I think they will. And then we just have to find time to get on the county council's docket to get their approval to start the time frame. And then it also in parallel, we'll work with Zion's Public Finance to amend the IFFP to collect whatever else we can. But at this point, it's August. That probably wouldn't get teed up until January.
What would you teed up?
The increase to the IFFP.
Impact the Uber process.
So I'll make a motion that we get the ball rolling on the amendment for the parameters resolution for a total of 58, which would be a $15 million increase.
What if we need 20 when the bids come in?
If we need 20, we probably need to circle the wagons. Because even at 10, we're kind of like, ooh.
Okay. Even if the county comes back and says, we have to provide for growth.
We actually have 20.
Because we've only borrowed 38. And if we ask for 58, we can borrow another 20. We already have 5 leeway in our credit because we've asked for 43. We've only borrowed 38. So we're really going from 38 to 58. But it's still.
Can you do that with my account?
Yes, Sam. Well, I'm thinking if we do need more, I mean, this is the original hard discussion is how do we pay for it, the debt, and it's putting it on the ratepayer somehow, and that's where we're all kind of starting to get uncomfortable. So I think this can be a natural cap there.
And I'm looking to escape that by the county telling me you have to.
Yeah.
But even I mean, we are acting at their discretion.
Right? Yeah.
So they are the ones that should be directing a lot of this. I think, I mean, this is a big enough decision where I'd like their insight.
Yeah, they
that's
do.
Who I report to.
They do with the rate setting.
Rate setting falls with the Administrative Control Board. Budget and debt falls with the County Council.
But this is a strategic decision.
Well, or it's not like by
for yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. It's
a little out of the ordinary.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Ian, are you asking for that before you make a decision?
You think we should
what
go?
Does it do to the rates though? Because those percentages were only for $10 million, right?
That's what I'm saying, is if it's 15,
they were
whether the county says it or not, like that's where I'm getting uncomfortable, where if we did nothing right now, current client customers are like, you know, paying a rate, increases are mostly would be based on increased capacity that someone that's a current customer is going to have a hard time digesting. Like I'm paying for future development. I'm not really getting an improvement. So I think you can say, yeah, you're making getting redundancy safety factors in the system, but if we make that rate increase too high, it becomes much less justifiable. And that's where I think if it's going to cost 15 more, then I don't know if we would go there. But at least we've got the door open for it.
It'll more than double the rate, right? That's kind of what that series of rate increases.
Yeah, I did the math too. It was like 125 and 10 years would be like 225. So yeah, it'd be an extra $100 10 years per month.
Based on
like a 6%
borrowing increase. $10 million.
Or yes.
But if we borrow $15 million, it's
even worse.
Even yeah, more than that.
And that wasn't taking an impact fees either. We have, you know, that's the other discussion that is down the road, that we could allocate more impact fees to pay off the debt and decrease the rates, is what I'm understanding. We still don't have nearly enough information to even get there, but it's an option down the road.
Having that water bill double or more, it seems.
Well, again, we've got to be able to answer the question, I think, and that's the hard part, is what's that paying for? So.
Yeah, it sounds like it's at least going to double.
Possibly, and that's like also
two and a half.
That's the harder discussion, but I think we keep the door open to get at least the flexibility to be ready to pull the trigger anywhere below 15 million, whether it's 1 million or 10 or 8 or whatever. We should at least get there.
And I guess the question, Mike, too, is if we don't do this to bring our full allocation in from Rockport, where are we going to get water from? We have obligations to fulfill Promontory's build out. We know Silver Creek Village is another one that's not fully built out.
So I'll ask again, what's the legal implication if we don't fill the Promontory obligation?
Seriously. Oh my gosh, they will throw you into
Promontory?
Yeah. I with my long years of experience with them, they will stop at nothing to get what they're entitled to. Would you? That's not a great
idea. Yeah, no, I mean, no. I think our legal fees would be exorbitant. And I don't know if the council would even allow it to go there.
Probably not. Is Promontory an exception?
To what?
The other obligations?
Well, Promontory is already,
you're already
committed. This is not a Dakota Pacific. Promontory's agreement was dating back to.
But do we have other ones that we're obligated to?
Silver Creek Village.
Yep.
All of the lots in Summit Park that haven't been built out, all of the lots in the Colony, you know, Glen. I mean, there's enough scattered around the system that
would be the same legal challenge.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Why are they different than other?
Promontory has a
annex into our district. Dakota Pacific is not.
Yeah, what Ian's talking about is existing properties that are already within the district that when we sign plats saying that we would provide service to those lots.
Yeah, they're not. Are they different than any of the other commitments we've made?
How many people are on standby right now?
There's about 1,360 units.
You've also got various units.
Part of the finance protection.
It's not just they've been annexed in. You have specific agreements with them to provide service. So it's more than just the annexation.
And they've been paying those base fees for years.
Mm-hmm. Standby.
Why didn't we just sign the rules?
Even before you do a well survey, if you've got a contractual obligation, if you sign a contract with them, even if they're not ready to build right now, or if you've already signed it. So, you know, for Promontory, they sign specialized water agreements before they pull any building permits. The Colony as well. So there are a number of different developments that are even in a different boat than your average person that just annexed in and they want you to sign the plat. There are others that have much more contractual obligations with the district.
The other alternative is to raise our rates so high that our lines never go up. So total demand just drops. Where customers here used to use, let's say, 0.6 acre feet a year, then it was 0.5, then it's 0.45, and now we're down to about 0.4 acre feet per connection. Because we did it in 2022. Rates were so high, people used a lot less water.
Yeah, but so, then there's also a drought, and there was messaging. I mean,
but it's kind of like when I've studied other, like Gorgoza, they have a limited source, so their water is relatively inexpensive for the first 40,000 gallons. But if a customer breaks that, it gets extremely expensive. And that's how they keep their source sufficient to meet their demand, is they just make it so expensive. So, I mean, it is another lever we could pull down the road, that we haven't said you can't have water. It's just $200 per thousand gallons if you go above a certain amount, you know. So that would drive usage down, and it would keep the base bid instead of making it lasting however many years, maybe last a little longer, because we're not pushing the water through the system. I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying that is a reality of what we could do. Like, almost, let's say the river dries up, you know, the full on drought. That's what we will have to do, because we will only have the water in our wells and what we could push. And so we would raise rates, because that's the only way we could keep people's usage below what we could produce.
I mean, a lot of the discussion is the second part, I think, as far as tonight making a decision.
Yeah.
Also go back to that, the motion of increasing the amendment for the $15 million. If the county does come back and say no more, then we started the ball rolling, but we just stop it there. But I doubt they will either, but at least we'll be ready come bid time to at least have flexibility.
All right, so at this point we have a motion on the table. We have anyone that would be willing to second it?
Where's the party?
Good question. So if there's no second to the motion dies.
Can you second it?
I can't.
She could vacate the chair, second the motion, and take the chair back, but it might be a 2-2 tie.
I'm typing for you.
Why are you hesitant?
Well, I think you're vice chair.
What does that mean?
It means you first.
That's what I heard.
Why are you hesitant, Ian?
I think it goes back to the uncomfort in the whole process. I really think we're off trajectory here. And I would really like to know the county's answer. I think if they do, if they answer the way I think they do, then I'm totally comfortable. If they don't, then I'm not.
Well, again, you are making a recommendation. You're not actually approving. You're making a recommendation to the county council to incur more debt. So what we're asking for is your willingness to make that recommendation. They ultimately are going to decide whether or not. And I guess in parallel, we could just go to the council and say, okay, council, what do you want? The board couldn't decide. just from a timing perspective and knowing where we are.
Does that set us back?
If you don't make a recommendation, potentially, because we then have to. Because
then it would have to go on the council's agenda.
Yeah, like I said, what we've done in the past is we've gone to the chair and the vice chair, with the chair and the vice chair of the committee, Lisa, myself, and then Shane, and we've kind of asked them what those two people's feelings were. They could come back and say no, and then it would probably die, or we could take it to the council, but I don't know when I could get on the council agenda. I guess it would be sometime in mid to late August, which would put this time frame back. And then we would then have to start the parameters resolution, the 14-day notice, the 30-day notice, the public hearing, which would probably put us into October.
And the bids come in, sorry.
On this time frame.
Mid-October.
Can you go to the first?
September 7th. That's the date.
So that would just push that probably into next year.
And as far as a board, you also have the off ramp of recommending to award the bid, right? Like you guys are the ones that, because of that level of debt, you guys are the ones that are ultimately.
And that's where I was going. So which meeting would that be at? That would be.
We're hoping to do it in November. But if we don't make a recommendation to the county council and we get pushed off.
Authorize Andy to sign the notice of award to the contractor. And it would have to be a pass motion. Just for the dollar.
He doesn't have a $50 million credit limit.
49.
Although he thinks I come up with money out of thin air. I do lose that out.
Yeah,
would it be the October board meeting?
Or it would be
approving the bid or not?
On
because that board meeting is the 22nd.
Well, it looks like reviewing bids, recommending the award would be.
Yeah, mid October is when you get the dollars. Mid October is when you know what pricing you're dealing with.
We have 90 days from there.
Put the financing together, or maybe a little bit more.
But we would issue the notice to proceed in our November 16th board meeting. And then it would be 90 days based on today's timeline.
You can't award it.
You wouldn't ask for the board opinion in October, you'd ask for it in November. That you're saying.
Do you think you'd have something to present to us?
It would be recommending the award in October and then the issue of the notice to proceed in November.
The board votes on that in the October board.
Well, and then we have to enter into a contract. And that's not going to happen in 30
We've
days.
Got on line 63, review the bids. We've got 90 days there, as much as 90.
Yeah, everything after goes back to kind of original schedule, irrespective of this discussion. So the life changes given this discussion based on bid opening. Once bid opening comes, then you've got
90
days to decide whether you're going to award the bid and proceed with the bidder. The start of the 90 days is the
line 62.
So you're gonna have to, depending on where those numbers, if it's really clean, those numbers show up and it's really obvious what to do. But if it's like, ooh man, we're in it,
and not quite there.
Yeah, I don't know if you have more funding or not. You got 90 days to figure out what you want to do and then secure that funding before you.
I can second it.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous. All right. I think that was really productive to talk that out.
Sure.
And I think we still have some points to where we can hope, you know. I think
the hard part's coming.
Well, my take on it.
We still have concerns too.
Or it's going to be easy.
Yeah. Well, so your point about bids, Ian. So we had, you know, we had the Summit Park tank, and then we had the Will Draw tank. Summit Park tank came in way higher than we were anticipating in the engineer's bid. The Will Draw tank was slightly less than what the engineer's bid was. So I mean, we've had both.
Same engineer involved.
Yes.
Interesting.
So Alan, we're going to go ahead and excuse you. We do need to go into closed session. Related to litigation.
Thanks, Alan.
Yes.
Thank you, Alan.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay.
Motion to go into executive session.
Yes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Thank you for your time.
All in favor?
Aye.
That's unanimous. Yeah.